This is Dr. Shelley Kerr, PastLifeLady.com, and you're listening to Ghosts in the Valley podcast.
And I am Al Cooley, host of Ghosts in the Valley podcast. Today is my 100th episode. I'm really stoked about this one. With almost 60,000 downloads into my fourth season, because when I first started out, I was kind of leery, you know. I mean, after the first 3 or 4 months, 30 downloads, I'm thinking, okay, you know, I'm going to stick with it, you know, because I really didn't get into it for the money. If you're getting into podcasting for the money, don't. I mean, it'll pay off eventually, but starting out, you have to be sincere in what your episodes are about, what your podcast is about. If you're having guests, are your guests sincere in what you're trying to put out there? And mine are, and mine will be, because I know that the paranormal is a huge, huge field. In 2019, there was 750,000 podcasters out there. Today, there's about 2.5 million. 100 million listeners alone in the United States. So the field is wide open. And I am blessed to have a great following, to have many downloads. I have met many, many new friends. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for downloading my episodes. So I was going through my past guests. I'm thinking, who can I put on here for my 100th, episode in 4 years? And all of a sudden my messenger beeped and it was, of a woman out of Minnesota. And I said, wow, looked at her bio and I said, she's got to be my 100th episode. I mean, she started out with being a young age and had a ghost experience that I think led her into the paranormal. And then she formed her own paranormal team, traveling across the United States. She bought her own haunted house. And I said, man, I got to have her on. So I want to welcome to the show, Jill Shelley. How are you?
Good, Al. How are you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, man, it's my pleasure. There's so much I want to talk about. You know, we're going to get to the haunted house, the Boyd house. I find that really, really fascinating. But before we get into all that, I want to start when Jill was a very young girl. You had a paranormal experience as a child that I think in your bio you said that changed your life and wanted to find out more about the afterlife. Is that correct?
Yeah, actually, I was, I'm not exactly sure how old I was, but I was pretty young. And I was always kind of into the scary, spooky, ghosty stuff, even at a young age, because my cousins and I would like to sit around and play like spooky ghost records and listen to ghost stories, read the books, you know, everything. But my grandmother's house, there was an upstairs bedroom that none of us kids liked, none of their cousins. Even when we played up there, listen, ghosts, or nobody would go in this one room. It was always really cold, really inviting. I always felt like somebody was staring at you through in this room every time you went in there, like you're not welcome here. So one particular night, we were sleeping. I was up in what they call the girls' room, which is just down the hall from that room. And my parents were in the other room sleeping. I could hear them snoring. Woke up in the middle of the night. Don't know why. But then I started hearing footsteps coming from that room into my, like not into my room, but right outside the bedroom door that of the room I was sleeping in. And my back was to the door. And as a young kid, you're like, not going to look, you know, it's the boogeyman. It almost felt like it was staring right through me, like just so intense. Like you just knew somebody was there. And then it just kind of went, and then it turned around and walked. I could hear the footsteps walk back, kind of threw the covers over my head. And I was like waiting for morning to come, sitting around the breakfast table. mentioned it, you know, asked my parents, did you get up last night? Which I knew they didn't, but I asked anyway. And they're like, no, we slept all night. And then kind of said what happened. And my grandma, who's extremely religious and I looked very much up to, and her bedroom's downstairs, so it would have never been her. But she just goes, oh my gosh, honey, that's just a ghost and he's not going to hurt you. And I thought, oh my gosh, here's grandma and she don't care. This is like no big deal to her. So I was like really fascinated at that point. Like, I've got to know more about these spirits and ghosts. Like, what are they? Who are they? And that just kind of sent me down the path of like doing readings, you know, books, watching documentaries, things like that. Because, you know, back then we didn't have the advent of the internet to look things up. That's just kind of how I got all my information, you know, and I kind of had some similar experiences at my mom's house too. Every once in a while, the lights would turn on. You'd be listening to the radio and all of a sudden it got like super loud. And then I'd be like, hey, can you turn that back down? And then it would go back down. So it wasn't like, you know, I couldn't explain it. I kind of have a feeling like when spirits are around. So as far as like, you know, I can't like psychically communicate or anything like that, but I have a good sense of when something is definitely around me. So, and that's always kind of been as a young kid too. But then again, with the advent of the social media coming around and the TV shows, that's where it really started hitting hard, because then you're like, oh my gosh, you know, I didn't know you could like really go out and investigate. And so, and that kind of pushed me towards doing that as well.
As being a child, the only one that witnessed this, or do you have brothers and sisters, or taking to your grandmother as a believer, were you the only one that seen this?
Yeah. As far as and not, like I said, I didn't see them. I really, really felt like they were there and really felt that it was like burning through me. As far as like even any of the things at home that would happen with my brothers and sisters, I would say, because we nicknamed the spirit at the house Billy. And I think it kind of started when, I think it's kind of started as a joke of that they said that they found a letter. And I don't know if it's true or not, but they had found a letter up in our attic to the house we moved in and said, oh, sorry about your son, Billy, that he passed away. And I think they had found out that he had passed away in the house. And so then we just started calling the ghost Billy. And I was the only one who actually had experiences. So when I would tell like my sister, I'm like, well, the radio turned off, or the bedroom light turned on and turned off when I tell it to. And she's just like, no, you're just like, they always just said I was making stuff up. So they never really had those experiences. You know, but you know what? They took me to horror movies when I was 5. So just going to say that probably didn't help me any either.
Now, moving on into your later years, did this lead you to start your own paranormal team?
Yeah, actually what happened is there was a guy at work that I met and we started talking. Originally, we just started hitting it off as far as we both like scary movies. So we would always talk, and he's like, yeah, I do investigating. I'm like, really? And so he's like, yeah, you want to start doing that with me and we can form a team. And so, you know, he's like, I got a name in mind. So it was St. Croix Paranormal was formed back then in 2010, started doing some investigating. And along the way, we acquired a few other people. We've been together for, gosh, 12 years now. So we're all just like family. Yeah. The original guy who started the group with me, he's no longer with us, but yeah.
I was going to say, do you want to give a shout out to your members?
Yeah, we have Steve, who was the original. He's not with us anymore. We still work together, really good friends. We talk all the time. So our other teammates, we have Donna, Alex, and Teresa. So yeah, they're just like my big family there.
And do you each have a certain job to do when you go on a site?
You know, we kind of just work really good as a team. So we kind of, it's not really you have a certain job. It's just, we kind of know what needs to be done. So usually when we go for an investigation, you know, we've already done some research as far as, you know, what's there, what kind of equipment are we going to bring? Where are we going to put stuff? We kind of have a, you know, talk about it, because usually when we're traveling, we have many hours in the car to talk. So we get it all figured out of who's going to put stuff where. So usually people just start grabbing cameras and start setting them up, and then they'll go get, you know, a piece of equipment, throw that on there. We always throw a voice recorder next to every camera. And then we just, yeah, kind of start going from there.
Who named the group St. Croix?
That was Steve, the founder of that. And that came about, we actually live, we were based out of Stillwater, Minnesota, which is located right on the St. Croix River.
Okay.
And so that's where he kind of got the name. Plus it's in the, they call it the St. Croix Valley as well. So yeah, and a lot of history goes along with Stillwater. We've done a lot of investigations in downtown Stillwater. That's actually some of the first investigations that we did. A lot of the buildings in the downtown district are very haunted. So that's kind of where we started. We actually got on my ghost story for an apparition that we captured in one of the downtown bars in Stillwater too. So that was kind of a cool thing. That was early in the beginning in 2010.
And you have an Indian, is there an Indian reservation or something near you?
There is next to the Boyd House. You know, as far as Stillwater goes, that used to be a old lumberjack town, but there were Native Americans and there was a war where they got kind of driven out from the area. So yeah, there's a lot of rich history in downtown Stillwater too.
Yeah, because I see that, you know, usually when you have like an Indian, Native Americans around a certain area, that, you know, the burial grounds or something around that area, you know, lingers into other nearby areas, mm-hmm. you know.
So yeah.
Just say Stillwater. How far do you travel for like an investigation?
Well, actually, tomorrow we're going to Ohio. So.
Oh, coming to my state, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to go to the Middle Point Schoolhouse. So we're going to be checking that out. That's probably the farthest we've gone. And then Missouri probably in the other. No, and we've been in Kansas too, going in the other direction. But that's about pushing it because, you know, we usually have to just do it on weekends. So it's like, you know, 12 hours in one day in the car is a lot. So.
Yeah, the Mansfield Reformatory in Ohio is pretty
interesting. Yeah, you guys got so much stuff in Ohio. And I'm like, oh, the drive is so long.
I don't do investigations anymore, but back in the day when I did a documentary on ghosts in the valley, we'd be in Ohio and Pennsylvania, very active on these two states. And I find more out west, it's more Native American and related or Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
Have you done any Bigfoot investigations or are you strictly ghosts and spirit?
Just strictly the paranormal. I find the Bigfoot thing fascinating. I've talked to some people. They're like, hey, if you want to go squatching with us, I think it would be interesting to do. But yeah, nothing I'd want to do on a routine basis. I'd probably fall over and impale a stick with me or something. I don't know. So
what's some of the favorite equipment you like to use in an investigation?
For me, I love the spirit box. So I use like all of them. Like I have the 7, the 11, the portals, you know, you name it, they make it, I get it. I just love the science behind that and just how it works. And I've gotten such incredible responses to the different questions. And we actually now recently have started doing the Estes method using the spirit box. For some reason, we've all tried it. You know, Donna and Alex and I've tried being the person with the headphones on and the blindfold listening, and we hardly get a thing. You put Teresa on it and you will have a full-blown conversation for up to 45 minutes with what's going on. We actually recently did a school. There was a little boy who came through that actually gave us his full name, where he said, he was like, my name is Stephen Michael Johnson. I was named after my grandfather who was very strong. I'm really strong. And he lived on 3rd Street. And he was just like going on. He's like, you're wearing pants. And I'm like, yes, girls wear pants. Or I said, yes, we are. And he's like, girls don't wear pants. So, you know, just this full conversation. And then he said, can you draw? Cause we were at a school and there's chalk and chalkboard. And I'm like, yeah, what would you like us to? And he's like, can you draw something? And I'm like, yeah, what do you want? He's like, can you draw me an apple? So we draw an apple. And he's like, can you draw me an apple with stripes? And so we draw that. And he's like, and then he starts going crazy. How about a shoe with a bow? And how about this? And can you draw a thunderstorm? And he was like going on and on and on. And then he's like, hey, can you write my name? Stephen Michael Johnson's number 1. And so we wrote that. And he's like, oh, thanks. I love you guys. Like, this is like a complete conversation. Because for some reason, and we've had many psychics, like if we're just out and about, like at a convention or something, just come up to Teresa and say, the beacon you have is absolutely incredible. So I think she just has some sort of gift with being able to talk. And when she gets done, she like pulls off her headphones. Is like, what were we talking about? What? So even sometimes when we're doing it, she goes, what is going on out there, you guys? So, you know, cause she gets only one side of the conversation. So she has no clue. She's gone as far as making us pray, going downstairs and getting a soda, you know, just all kinds of stuff. So it's just incredible. I just love doing the Estes methods with her.
You know, sometimes the spirit will pick a certain member of the group to connect with.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you don't get anything unless you have that one certain member, you know?
Right. Yeah. She's the one, no matter where we go, even before the, as we call her, the paranormal punching bag, because she's the one who's going to get scratched, pushed. I've seen her thrown across a room. She's always the one who's getting hurt by a spirit, not necessarily hurt, but always having that real physical interaction.
That was my next question. Has anybody been hurt on your team?
Yeah.
Going on an investigation. There you go right there.
Yep. We were actually, we were at Whispers Estate in Indiana, very well known for negative energy. So if you know the history, there was a doctor there who did a lot of unethical things with his patients. The people were buried in the backyard. His daughter caught on fire, so he mercy killed her 3 days later. They also had another little boy. He fell down the stairs and died. And then the one that's really crabby and mean, which is who we had the experience with, one of them, his name was Virgil, and he was the caretaker of the property. And he's kind of a crabby guy anyway. But on his last day on his retirement, as he was putting his tools away upstairs in the closet, that's where they kept them, he dropped dead of a heart attack. So he's not happy and he doesn't like people in his closet. Even the people who own the house said, hey, if this door's open, we won't even come up here. It's just bad news. So many people have been scratched and locked in there. And that particular closet. So when I say closet, it's more of almost a large storage walk-in, because they actually had a little table, two chairs you could sit on, and stuff in there. So you could go back quite a ways on that. So Teresa was up there sitting in the chair in the closet, you know, because that's what we do. And I was in there with her, and I just got this strong, and I heard this voice in my head say, get out of this closet. And I just chalked it up to me, because I don't like to be in closets anyway. I have a fear of being locked in a room. And I don't like that. So just because I heard that, okay, I'm going to step out, but I'm not going to say anything to her, because it's probably just me. And then at the same time, we were running the spirit box, and it said, shut this door. And we didn't do that either. So next thing you know, her in that chair come flying 4 feet out of that room, and she lands on her hands and knees in the hall, you know, and we, of course, we're trying to debunk it. She's like, well, if I fell, I would have just fell forward. I wouldn't be out here in the hall. And she's like, and I physically felt somebody pick up the chair and push it. So yeah, that was probably the most, as far as, you know, any real physical interactions. You know, like I said, we've all been touched, you know, I've been tapped on, shirt tug, that kind of stuff, a few scratches. But seeing what happened to Teresa was probably the most extensive thing I've personally seen.
2010, you started that group.
Right.
In 12 years. So you never came across anything demonic yet?
No, we've gone to places that were supposed to be demonic, and we didn't get that feel from it. We did go to two places. I don't think it's open anymore, but the Sedansville Rectory. I don't know if that's still open or not. I thought it was up for sale over there in Ohio.
What was that?
The Sedansville Rectory.
I'll have to check on that. I think it's up for sale.
Yeah, I that's what I saw last. So I don't know if it's going to stay, if anyone who buys it's going to keep up with the paranormal or not. And that was supposed to have a lot of negative and demonic type stuff. Mm-hmm. But we did not get that experience. Whatever was there was really draining Teresa that night. Like, she was literally falling asleep, standing up. She couldn't stay awake. And that's not her, because she at the time was a bartender. So very used to staying up all hours of the night. But we didn't, you know, as far as any negativity, the only thing we got later, which was really odd, we got an EVP at like 4 a.m. of, I want your skin. So that was kind of creepy.
Yeah, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the only other place that we went that was supposedly demonic, which is no longer there either. Boy, all the good ones seem to disappear. We loved Revenant Acres. That by far was an awesome place in Indiana. We loved it. But supposedly only men seemed to get possessed. And at the time, Alex was with us. And of course, he was kind of worried about that. And when it was time for bed and everything, we all had the mattresses and he didn't want to sleep in there. And I'm like, dude, it's fine. Just put your mattress between us girls. We gotcha, you know? And then probably like an hour later, you know, cause they're all touching the mattresses, I, you know, movement. And I look, and he's getting up, and I'm like, what's up, bud? He's like, I just heard footsteps coming down the stairs and I feel really uncomfortable right now. And I just cannot be in this house. And so he went and slept in the van that night. But right after the footsteps came later on review, we got an EVP of it said, kill one.
Oh, really?
So, and I, so now to this day, I'm like, I wonder which one it was going to be.
Maybe he made the right decision, right?
Maybe he did, but yeah. So those were the only two places that we've been that supposedly had some really evil demonic things. But again, we did not get that type of experience, but you know, you're going to get different stuff no matter where you go.
Right. Where do you think the furthest you went for to investigate?
Oh, I would probably say Ohio would probably be our farthest. Mm-hmm. Then, yes, it's a long haul.
What would be your favorite investigation?
There's so many and they keep growing, you know. I always loved my first investigation. That's always kind of cool. We went to the Villisca Axe Murder House.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I love that. I was terrified because that was our first place we ever went. That was a well-known haunted location. Prior to that, we were just doing, private homes and businesses. So we never really had this, oh, you're going to spend the night here. So that was really cool. But we did get a lot of really good interaction. We had like our REM pod going off a lot. We had like they were throwing little pebbles through the grates from upstairs to downstairs. You could hear this little ting, 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 ting. But I think the coolest thing is that we got some really awesome EVPs. And I wish, you know, at the time you would have heard them then. But we actually have like the kids talking to each other. So like the one kid says, you want to play? The other one says, no way. One of the women or kids that died, her name was Lena. And then they also have an older boy, which I can't remember his name now. But we heard that Lena likes to mess with the guests that are there. So she thinks it's fun to play pranks and things. So I think she was going to do something because we got a clear. I mean, these are all class A. I didn't even have to tweak them at all. It was like me and you talking today. And it just, he said, no, Lena, no. So he was actually saying her name. We like came in and we're like, is anybody here? And we heard our word, you know, we're right here. And then we were, you know, of course we had toys and brought all kinds of stuff. And we got like a little kid, he giggles and says, I want to touch your things. So it's just really, it was just fascinating, you know, to hear all that. But
do you take like any trigger items with you? Like if there's children involved, like toys or dolls?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like I said, we do research on where we go. So yeah, we have different types of toys. You know, now it's really nice because you can get those REM bears and we now have a REM cat. So I think that's really helping with a lot of the trigger object as well. A lot of times too, we use toys that aren't meant for ghost hunting, but you know, if they're touch activated, because that's how some of the other toys are. And I've seen other toys that are not meant for ghost hunting, you know, just because they're touch activated, they'll work. So we bring those along too, you know, so yeah, just a lot of different things, you know, even if we're doing adults, we've done places where, you know, we've brought in, you know, like you got the old fake, you know, pistol, mm-hmm. you know, just anything, the old bottle of booze that's, you know, nothing in it, you know, cards, you know, coins from that, you know, just lots of things, anything we can think of that are, we've even gone as far as dressing up.
I was going to say that. Yeah. So if you're going to a different time period, you know, they may respond a whole lot better, like say Civil War, if you're a Confederate or Union outfit, you know, so, you know, or that time period.
Yeah. Yeah. We've done the doctors and nurses quite a bit. We just recently did that because we just did Indiana State Sanitarium in May. So we went in first as doctors and nurses. We had the old fashioned hat and the whole nine yards. We've dressed up as nuns before. So we've been to a couple of churches and convents. You know,
Sister Jill.
Yes, I'm pretty sure they're not buying it, but yeah. Yeah, we walk around, we'll have our little Bibles and our crucifixes and we'll talk and stuff. And Teresa even actually found at antique shop, she found it's like an old communion set and actually had communion wafers in it. So we have that too. So we can use that as trigger objects too.
Okay. When we come back from our break, we're going to get into the Boyd House. I can't wait to hear this one. We'll be right back.
This is Weird on the Rocks, a podcast that explores the weird, unusual, strange, and unexplained, all while getting our drink on. Join me every other Monday as I share a different cocktail and discuss true crime, paranormal stories, unexplained phenomena, conspiracy theories, and much more. Find Weird on the Rocks on social media, the website weirdontherocks.weebly.com, and listen on all of your favorite podcast apps. And don't forget to cheers and stay weird.
This is Dr. Shelley Kerr, PastLifeLady.com, and you're listening to Ghosts in the Valley podcast.
Okay, I'm back with Jill Shelley. She is the owner of the Boyd House, and she's also on the paranormal team with St. Croix Paranormal. And right now we're going to talk about the Boyd House. I mean, this really fascinates me. I mean, you've been to so many places, and I watched the documentary on YouTube the other day, and I was so intrigued by all the paranormal teams that came through your house. And there wasn't a bad comment about, I mean, from any of them. And it says a lot when you have another team come in and say they'll come back, you know, and how active it was. What led you to buy the Boyd House?
Well, through all my travels, doing investigating, I kind of got the idea that it would be really fun to have my own place to go and investigate when I can, and then also allow others to come and investigate as well. So started my journey on looking for a haunted place to buy, but you know, nobody advertises that way. So I kind of would just do like searching on the internet for myself, you know, looking in the price range year. I'm just kind of seeing if I get kind of a feel for the house. So I looked at several places, you know, minimal activity at certain ones, sometimes nothing. But then when I came across the Boyd House, I was just really drawn to it. I just loved all the pictures. It kind of just had that this is the one feeling to me. So then I went and took a look at it with Donna, and we went down and looked. And while we were waiting for the realtor to show up, usually if we have a feeling or something, we just kind of see if anyone says anything. She didn't say anything, but I said, hey, you kind of feel like somebody's looking at you from the attic window. And she's like, yeah, wasn't going to say, but yeah, did kind of feel that. And so then we went in the house, and it was really like you could feel that something was there, but kind of staying a distance from you. So we did set up some equipment, and our REM pod in one of the rooms, which is now the library, went off within 8 minutes of being there. And then we started running the spirit box, and we got like a lady that said, who are you? So for her, this was like really different. Like why, who, you know, she doesn't know us, and now we want to talk to you. So we just got a little bit of stuff, you know, had a really good feel about it, reached out to a psychic that I really, really trust. And she's like, oh man, yeah, there's like six spirits there. Everything that she told us about the house as we did some investigating and research and even just, you know, our experiences there, everything she said was true. And then I thought, well, you know, why don't we just ask the people that live there? Because, you know, I'd been vacant for quite some time, but they lived there for 30 years, raised some kids and stuff. Like they surely must have had something. So they did happen to ask him, and the mom right away said, well, I always thought that house was really funny. So she said that she would hear old time music playing sometimes. Their one daughter had a lot of experiences. She had seen a man in the house on more than one occasion. People would sleep over and they would have their blankets tugged on. They would feel touching. So just quite a bit of activity in the house, you know, but as she was growing up, people thought she was crazy and making things up. She would tell people about all our experiences and they're like, you're nuts, you know, but now that we've come in and improved it, now they're like, oh, I guess you weren't crazy. So, but yeah, so that just kind of, that's kind of how I came to get the Boyd House. And when I first got it, I wasn't getting a lot of activity. I thought, oh boy, did I make a mistake here? Like, you know, but we've renovated it back to the 1900s.
That's cool.
So as we were doing stuff like that, we started to get more and more activity. But one of the things that I did is in one of the kids' room, I had put our little REM bear out, and I was like, hey, you guys, like if you want presents and stuff, people will bring you things. I'll bring you things, you know, but we got to know that you're here. Like, so if I don't know you're here, this isn't going to happen. And then that night that bear went off on and off for like 3-4 hours. And he hadn't gone off for like, I had no equipment interaction for like a whole month. But I also think too, this was all new to them, you know, because prior that, you know, nobody's communicated with them. So now I'm asking you to communicate with me. And now you don't know what any of this stuff is. So like when you go to well-known haunted locations, I mean, the spirits have seen this equipment 110 times. They figured it out. They've learned how to work it. So I started spending more time like explaining what the stuff was, what I was doing, why I was there. And then, so now I feel like we're all like really tight friends here at the Boyd House. you know, I spend so much time there. And, you know, even if I'm not investigating, because, you know, I also forgot when I bought it, I'm the one who has to do all the work for it. You know, I spend a lot of time cleaning and doing stuff and maintenance. And we're, you know, right now we're redoing the basement. So, you know, even while I'm just working, I'm just talking to them, you know? So I usually have a voice recorder running at all times though, because I just never know. Like my, one of my favorite EVPs from the house was I was cleaning in one of the rooms and I was just nonstop chitter chatter. Like I was like, hey, I'm going to a wedding this week. And you ever been to a wedding? You know, and I was just like going on and on. And then when I get home, I listen to the voice recorder and we have this woman, she just never told me her name, but she's real raspy voice. Sounds like she smoked a lot of cigarettes or something. Uh-huh. She always talks like this. She just, so I'm just chitter chattering on it. And because I was talking, I missed the first half of the EVP. Like I couldn't extrapolate it out. And it's like, oh, why didn't I shut up? But then after that, she said, I'm trying to sleep. So I don't know if she was like, stop talking because I'm trying to take a nap and you won't shut up. So that was like one of my favorite EVPs that I've ever captured at the house.
You bought that house, what, in 2019?
Yep, 2019.
Then you had all hell break loose with the COVID and shit.
Yeah.
It had to be a tough period there. Especially when you're trying to get people to come in as guests, you know, make money off of this thing, you know, for different paranormal teams and other paranormal enthusiasts, you know. So I'm sure COVID set you back a bit. But now that the COVID's over with, this should be a very busy Halloween season for you.
Yeah, it's actually been really busy this whole year. Like most of our weekends for at least Saturdays have filled up. And we have very few Saturdays available at this point up until wintertime because not everybody travels in the winter. But yeah, it's been actually staying really busy. So yeah, during COVID, really, we took a hit, you know, bad time to open. You know, you had a few people here and there. But yeah, it's really, I would say in the last 2 years, been really busy, which is good. It's really good. We use 90% of what we take in is put back into the house, you know, to restore it, keep it. We had to put a new roof on it when we got it. We had to put gutters, you know, things broke down. And then again, you know, just all the renovating of bringing it back to the 1900s. And, you know, we had even the furniture that we have in there is all, you know, Victorian style furniture, that type of stuff.
Now, do you live in the house or do you live elsewhere?
Nope, I do not live in the house.
Okay.
You know what? It's funny that I love investigating so much, but I do not want to live in a haunted location. Yeah, you know, there's been times where I've spent the night by myself, primarily because maybe we have like a maintenance guy coming the next day or something. I'll be doing stuff and I'll hear footsteps coming up the stairs. And I'm like, you know what, guys, how about not tonight? Like, we're not going to do this tonight. And they respect me, you know, so if I don't want them to do something, they're usually pretty good about listening to what I have to say.
Watching your documentary, you had like, I think
the Eckerds. Yep.
Yeah. They were the like 1912, I believe.
Yeah. 1912.
Okay. So the family, that's what blew my mind, was every single person. I mean, the husband, Fred, his wife, Minnie, and well, this all come back to me. I just watched it.
Yeah, you're doing good. You got the names right.
And their two children all died in the house. So are these four people, are they part of the, you said there's six or seven spirits in the house. Are these four part of those spirits?
Yeah, we are for sure that we have Fred, because we've got a lot of EVPs or spirit boxes saying I'm Fred or Fred's coming. A lot of things to do with Fred. I've never actually gotten any of the woman's name, but I'm just going to assume that it's Minnie. And we've had many psychics say that it is Minnie. So I'm going with that. And I feel that. I feel like that is her. And then the kids are probably maybe not with her, because her one died in infancy. And then the other one died, I believe, when he was between 3 and 5, and he choked to death in the house. So we do have some little child activities, but we also have some more adolescent type, you know, child spirits in the mm-hmm. home. And then a lot of the objects that I have in the house, a lot of the dolls, some different things we have in the home are reportedly haunted. You know, I cannot validate for sure, but, you know, we do sometimes, like I picked up this really creepy clown doll from the antique store and the K2 goes off crazy anytime you bring it by him. So yeah, it just a lot of different things. We actually acquired a supposedly haunted painting from a gal. It's really creepy. I can't even describe it. It's like blue with monkey with some chairs in a weird looking house, three-dimensional. Like it's weird. But she told us the story was she found it on the side of the road and her husband picked it up. There's also a story written on the side of it, you know, around the frame about monkeys. And she was always afraid to read it because she felt like it was going to summon something. Plus, she said she always felt like something was looking at her. And then her husband became extremely obsessed with this painting. He hung it in the garage. He'd just stand there and stare at her for hours, just really obsessed with it. And then he actually committed suicide in front of the painting. So she no longer wanted it. So we took it and we put it in our house. The first night we did it, we were up in the attic running the spirit box. We're like, what do you think of the painting? And it said, monkey evil, get rid of it. So that was like the first thing. So that one just stays in the kids, in the blue boys room. And now I haven't had an electrician out at all. But after I put that painting up, we no longer have power to that room. And we don't know why. You know, but I thought, well, most paranormal people don't have the power on anyway, so I didn't bother to fix it. So, right. I mean, it could be an electrical issue. I just found it weird that all of a sudden this painting goes up and none of the outlets or the flippy switch work. Yeah, it's kind of odd.
I was watching the documentary and I think one of the investigators said said they were killed there.
We've had somebody say she was stabbed in it with the spirit box. We haven't had any confirmed a murder at the house.
So somebody was stabbed there.
Yeah. And somebody could have been stabbed and didn't die there, you know, and it could be some residual energy. I was told in the 70s, somebody broke in, tried to steal a bunch of stuff from the lady that used to live there, and they tied her up and put her in the closet. What's really interesting with that is that we had one of the first teams in to the Boyd house. She was a psychic and she picked up on that right away. And nobody knew that. It was just somebody had sent me a message that they're like, hey, I heard of this story back in the day. And I was like, well, did they kill her or hurt her? And they're like, no, she was just traumatized. So then she moved away after that. She right away said something happened in this closet. I see a woman tied up in here. You know, could be some energies left from that too. So there's a lot of things I've had people say they're, you know, psychics, you know, take them for what they're worth. But, you know, it's interesting that sometimes then I find out later they were true. But they said that there was quite a lot more deaths that you will never find in this house. So,
and I was watching the documentary and the one gentleman on the one paranormal team was poked, I think, behind the neck.
Oh, yep. Yep.
Scared the crap out of him, you know, so. I can relate to that.
Yes. Like that closet where it said she was stabbed in and I was standing in front of it. Just like thinking, oh, what am I going to do next? And all of a sudden, I felt a tug on the back of my shirt. And then I just spun around and I'm like, oh my God.
So you were physically touched in the house.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had them touch. The first night we stayed there, my husband, he kept rubbing his arms and his legs and stuff. I'm like, what? He's like, I don't know. I feel like I'm crawling with bugs. Bugs are all over me, you know? And he is not into this whatsoever. I mean, he loves what I do. He likes to see, you know, things that I do. And it's very supportive in me. But for him to go investigating and stuff is not his thing.
Mm-hmm.
So just for him to say, and I said, oh, I know you're just feeling the energy from the spirits and stuff. And he was actually so jealous. He's the only person that's actually seen an apparition in the house. So I've never seen a full-blown apparition. I've seen dark shadow figures, but never a full-blown apparition. And he was coming in through the front door carrying a bunch of stuff. He looked up at the stairs because he's like, I saw a woman standing there with long brown hair. He's like, I thought it was you for a second. And then she was gone. And I'm like, oh, sure, you got to see it. I knew this.
Well, if I ever come to Minnesota, I'm going to stop and see this house.
Oh, yeah, I'd love to have you.
We're going to put your links and everything in the bottom of this episode of where you can go to schedule an appointment to. What'd you say? You can stay all night at the house if you're a paranormal team, or do you conduct tours?
We don't do any tours. We just offer the private overnight investigation. So we allow you and up to 8 people to come spend the night at the house. You can get it from 3 p.m. till noon the next day. And, you know, we're a fully functioning house. So we have bathrooms and you know, heat, electric, we window air conditioning if it's summertime. We offer coffee and some snacks, so that's always a bonus. So we charge $200 for the night, and then you can book us. You can check our calendar online on our website, which is theboydhouse217.com. You can direct email us at boydhouse217@yahoo.com, or you can find us on Facebook. And you can get all of us that way too.
Okay. And as far as your paranormal team, do you do residential?
Right now we just kind of quit doing the residential just with the COVID, and we just kind of moved on from doing the residential. So if somebody needs me to refer, I can refer someone to you for that particular thing. So we're right now kind of focusing on just our travels and mostly the Boyd House.
So you really don't do businesses? Or?
Yeah, if a business reached out, we totally would do that because that's like super cool. We like those. It's a more, I don't know, it's a more controlled environment too, I think. So yeah, businesses, because it's kind of like doing like any of our travel type situations. It's just the private homes. We just kind of quit doing those.
And where would they contact you for that?
Pretty much right now, just on Facebook, you know, if they're interested in contacting St. Croix Paranormal for that. Or go through Boyd House.
You know, I was going to say, yeah, the Boyd House.
Yeah, you can get a hold of you. We're easy to find. You can get a hold of me easy.
Well, Jill, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. And I will put the links in the bottom of this episode. You are my 100th episode.
Woo-hoo!
I'm excited about that, and I'm excited having you on the show. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, Jill Shelley, for coming on the show, being my 100th episode. And please check out Jill's links at the bottom of this episode. And if you are in the Minnesota area, oh my goodness, check out the Boyd House. I know I'm going to make it there. Maybe not this year, but it will be maybe next year. What I understand from watching the documentary, it's one hell of a active house. And please remember, next month, the complete month of September, is UFO month. I'll have 3 episodes next month on the Berkshires UFO Revisited, the Kecksburg, PA crash landing of a UFO in 1965. My wife and I went to the Kecksburg UFO Festival last month. We had a great time, the interesting people I met there. And we'll also talk about the UFO that went over Trumbull County in my county in 1994, plus updates on other UFO sightings. So check back next month, UFO September 2022. See you in 2 weeks. Al Cooley, Ghosts in the Valley Podcast.